Welcome to the March 2017 installment of Industrial Heating Magazine's Vacuum Heat Treat Minute with Bill Jones, CEO of the Solar Atmospheres family of companies, and host Jim Nagy, president of Solar Manufacturing. Solar Manufacturing is the innovative leader in advanced vacuum heat treating furnaces. This month's Vacuum Heat Treat Minute podcast is entitled Electric Power Company Rebate Programs and is part two in this series. Here's our host, Jim Nagy, to introduce the topic of today's podcast.
As a leader in vacuum furnace technology, Solar Manufacturing has endeavored to find ways to lower electric power consumption by improving the operational efficiency of our vacuum heat treating furnaces. In the course of our research and testing, we have learned about electric power rebate programs offered by various power companies across the country. In today's podcast, Bill Jones continues his interview of Rial Fredette, technical consultant. Rial has assisted our customers in the process of applying for the power rebates. Their discussion explains how the use of variable speed drives will not only save energy, but also extend the life of the vacuum booster, diffusion pump, gas quench motor, and the pump motors of the water cooling system.
We've spent some time talking about the hot zone itself, which is in a furnace of our type. That's the main energy absorber in the furnace. Let's turn to what other possibilities there are. And I would like you to comment on the vacuum systems themselves, both the vacuum pumps and also primarily the two vacuum pumps that are the primary pumps that we use in the furnace. There's not much we can do about the roughing pump itself. That's a whole different subject, the main roughing pump. But the quote, roots blower, unquote, is something that we can do something about. I'd like you to comment on that. And I'd like you to talk about the high vacuum diffusion pump. And so there are two areas. Let's take the roots blower, for instance. And then secondly, I'd like you to comment on what we've done about the diffusion pump.
Okay, the roots blower, which basically is needed during the initial roughing phases of the cycle prior to initiating the diffusion pump into the cycle, is active for a certain period of time during the beginning of the cycle. Now, typically this roots blower pump could have a 15 horsepower motor, which would draw somewhere in the area of 11 kW. And yet, when it's not needed, we can idle that pump to reduce the speed in half, and therefore use the power consumption is reduced to roughly 2.5 kW. So you're essentially saving a lot of power by taking the pump and idling it when it's not needed in the cycle. And in some of our cycles, which could be, when you're at the diffusion pump is in the cycle and the roots blower is not needed, some of these idling times could be 80 to 90% of the cycle time. So there's a tremendous savings you can have by taking the motor and running it at half speed, which we can do with these variable frequency drives that we introduce into the system.
Exactly. I'd also like to point out that on a roots blower pump, the normal practice has been to use a standard motor, 10, 20 horsepower, whatever it might be, and to drive it with what we call an across-the-line motor starter. So which means is that when you turn on the pump automatically or manually or whatever, you're putting the full starting torque of that motor onto the roots blower. And that just takes and cranks the gearing inside the roots blower every time you start it. Now, what about when we use a variable speed drive? What happens with that when it starts up one of these blowers? The variable speed drive, as part of its basic component, you have a ramping program in the variable speed drive so that instead of slamming on all this power in a few cycles, we can actually bring the motor speed driving the roots blower up to speed, let us say, within 30 seconds, which makes no difference at all in the whole cycle, but it enormously reduces the wear and tear on the blower itself and can add to the life of the blower considerably. All right, now you mentioned the diffusion pump. So let's talk a little bit about the diffusion pump, Rial.
depending on the size of the diffusion pump that's used in the system, the diffusion pump has heaters that draw a considerable amount of power. And again, for different diffusion pumps, it could be somewhere between 8 kW and 32 kW per hour of power needed to operate these heaters. Well, again, the diffusion pump is only needed during the high vacuum phases of the cycle. So when you're in the high vacuum phase, the diffusion pump is on. When you're in other phases of the cycle, the diffusion pump is not needed, such as the cooling phases or when you're emptying and loading the furnace. The diffusion pump still basically, because you're going to keep it somewhat on to have it ready for the next cycle. But we're able to reduce the power to those heaters basically in half, a system with silicon control rectifiers, I guess, and so forth that can do this when it's not needed in the cycle. And this can all be programmed in to save, again, cycle throughout power throughout the cycle.
Yes, and these silicon controlled rectifiers are, we in the industry, we use the word SCR. And by using these SCRs, we can control the power to the heating elements doing the very things that Riau has said. However, there's another factor. This also, by not having the diffusion pump power, the heating elements on full power all the time, it greatly increases the life of those diffusion pump heaters. And if you've ever had the pleasure of changing a diffusion pump heater on the underside of a diffusion pump, it's not pleasant. So that if we can get better heater life, it's absolutely very desirable. And by using these this reduced power on the heating elements, it's been my experience that you can triple the life of those heating elements versus having them on full power, not alone saving all the energy. And the energy part, that's part we can get back from the power company. But the maintenance power reduction and the greater life, that is an advantage to the operating company. I do want to comment briefly, though, back to the Roots blower, because most of the older furnaces all used motors that were belt drives to the Roots blowers. And we have found over the last number of years, not only using a variable speed drive, but to direct drive. In other words, rather than using a belt-driven Roots blower, but to use a direct drive motor mounted right on the blower itself and the variable speed drive greatly extends the life of the blower. Most people might say, well, this is a minor cost, and so, well, these Roots blowers are costly. You might pay $14,000 or $15,000 for one of these Roots blowers, and the repair cost could be easily 60 or 70% of new. And as a matter of fact, most of the rebuild shops will get a blower in, and that rather than rebuild it, they'll try to sell you a new one. So there are reasons to take a look, from a maintenance engineer, to take a look at these various things that are available that we've talked about. Let's change gears here for a moment. Let's talk about the water cooling system. Our water cooling systems in the furnace, for operating the furnace, all uses electric motors for circulating water through the furnace, water through our heat exchanging media, whether it be an air to water heat exchanger or whether it be a cooling tower, an evaporative cooling tower, and also the fans that operate power or run as required, expel the heat from one or the other of those devices. What about those things, and what can we do about saving energy in that area?
Well, on our external water cooling systems for our furnaces, we monitor the temperature of the water, and we can basically control when and how often these fans come on to cool the system. Now, I'm primarily talking about our external closed systems, where we have heat exchangers and cooling fans. Now, we typically monitor the water temperature during the not only during the heating cycles, but during the cooling cycles, where it somewhat peaks to a temperature of maybe 110 degrees or something like that. But we always like to try to monitor and maintain a certain water temperature to be in the area of 85 to 90 degrees, so that we prevent any problems with outside air temperatures and so forth. But because of this, we can again turn the fans on and shut them off when we don't need them.
how do we use the variable speed drive with the fans themselves? Because we just don't turn them on and off. We drive those with the VFDs or the variable speed drives.
Right. On the motors, we can reduce the speed of the motors to basically half the speed, and therefore reduce the power by approximately 75% of what the normal draw would be.
Right. Now, just adding to what Rial has said, the other water pump are pressure pumps. That is the pumps that are circulating water from our cooling devices outside is circulated through our plants. We like to use one or two big water cooling systems, if you wish. And we actually control the pressure of that whole system using variable speed drives. In the case of the solar companies, I like to use 50 psi pressure, and we do that with an electrical or electronic, if you wish, control back in through a variable speed drive into the pressure pumps so that we throttle those pumps back, doing the same things that you've talked about with the fans. We also do it with the pressure pumps. Okay, now one of the main power absorption of the devices in the furnace, in our furnaces, in the vacuum furnace, is the way we cool the work. Obviously, we heat the work with electric power, and as Rial has said, through radiation energy. We bring it up to temperature, and then at the end of the cycle, we backfill the furnace with gas, and then we turn on a large blower, and sometimes multiple blowers, to cool the workload down, and these are big blowers. Now tell me how we might use the variable speed drives in order to save energy with those motors.
Typically, on any given cycle, the gas cooling fans or motors are turned on when you initiate cooling and operate at maximum speed to reduce the higher temperature down to as fast as possible to a lower temperature that you're trying to achieve. Now, once you reach a certain temperature, the cooling aspect of the system somewhat changes, and you're able to somewhat reduce the motor speed or reduce the draw that the change the speed of the motor to finish out the cycle to bring the load back to somewhat room temperature. And a VFD system can be put on these motors also and programmed in so that once you reach a certain lower temperature within the furnace, you can reduce the speed of the motor to complete the cycle, drawing less power.
Right. Actually, it's a whole lot less power. Because let's say you have a 300 horsepower motor, which we have on some of our larger gas cooling systems. If running at full speed, you're taking 300 horsepower. 300 horsepower is about 300 kW. And 300 kW is a lot of power. And if you can reduce that power so that you don't have that power on through the whole cycle, say you only have to have the maximum power for half the cycle, and during the other half the cycle, we can drop the speed in half, we can save a lot of electric power, depending on what speed you drop the quench motor to. Now, I want to comment on something else, and that is when you're running the furnace using argon gas. Argon is not a very nice gas because, for several reasons, but the first thing being is that it does not have a very good thermal transfer characteristic, but worst of all, it's a very heavy gas. And what that means is at the lower end of the cooling cycle, we get a great deal of heat of compression. So if you have a furnace, or if you have a quench motor that's running at full speed, full power all the time, you have this heat of compression at the end of the cycle, and actually the cooling gas coming back into the furnace may be as much as 160 or 175 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, if at toward the bottom end of the cycle, let's say when you get down under whatever temperature you can drop the speed of the blower down, let's say that you've got a work temperature of 750 degrees. And at that point, if you can drop the speed of the blower in half or maybe even in one quarter, now you don't have that heat of compression. The actual temperature of the gas coming back into the hot zone is considerably lower, and actually it'll cool at a faster speed, which is really overlooked by most people. So here again, that's another advantage. It cuts the cycle time down and reduces power, all of which we can recover in energy savings with the power company. What's been the success of our programs? I know we've done at least almost six, I think, not quite, but close to that, six of these rebate programs. So what sort of success have we had with our power companies that we've dealt with? And how have our recommendations and our calculations, which take time and cost us money, but how has that resulted in payback, the reaction from the power companies themselves?
Okay, first of all, the power companies that we work with on prior programs have typically used a second group that evaluates the materials that were submitted for our rebates. Our rebate material that we submit is usually a very detailed analysis of what we're trying to demonstrate with each furnace that we're working on for that particular rebate. And this includes detailed calculations on the losses for the various components we've talked about above relating to the insulation or the variable speed drive systems or the diffusion pump heaters. And with each phase, we demonstrate for a given cycle what the savings would be for the year end. This is a very detailed report, which could amount to 12 to 15 pages of different materials we submitted. So it is a lot of work that we do, and yet the companies we work with that we're supplying equipment to or we're dealing with appreciate our efforts. And so far, these documents that we've submitted to these evaluating companies have been all accepted, and they're turned over to the power companies then with their recommendation, which is usually exactly or very close to what we're saying we're going to save for doing all of these changes. Now, we've been successful. We've seen rebates from an area of $40,000 to $70,000 plus for a given application we've made for a rebate. So these are very well worthwhile efforts. We're happy to help our customers, especially those buying some of our equipment, to proceed with these rebate programs.
That's right, Rial. Now, and I would like to just comment, in case of a big furnace, like we just put in out our 48-foot deep furnace out at Hermitage, because of the problems we were up against with the available power, to supply power to the entire plant, we had to adjust the power supply. We had to size it down so that we did not overdraw and particularly overseed our demand factors which we monitor by, and also the power company monitors as well. So that with these energy reductions we've been able to do, we can keep our demands down. And in the case of the Hermitage plant, it got us out of having to build that big extra power line.
This concludes our discussion on electric power company rebate programs. Please join us again in the near future for our next informative Vacuum Heat Treat Minute podcast.
The Vacuum Heat Treat Minute podcasts are underwritten by Solar Manufacturing, the innovative leader in advanced vacuum heat treat furnaces. You can find us on the web at solarmfg.com. We encourage our listeners to search the resources tab on our websites for technical resources available for download through the solar companies. Thank you for listening. And be sure to look for our next podcast for another informative Vacuum Heat Treat Minute.